Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. You're listening to The World Today. My name is Frank Weltner. Today is January the 20th, 2011. After being on assignment for 2 days, I decided that I best be back at the microphone. Besides, there's a foot of snow outside my window, so there's no going anywhere for a while. Today's first story has to do with the Tunisian Revolution. The revolution has become so serious that all of Tunisia's government ministers who belong to the longtime ruling party quit their memberships on Thursday in a bid to distance themselves from the country's ousted president and quell unrest in the capital, where the army fired warning shots to break up protests. Demonstrators converged on the RCD party headquarters in central Tunis, dismantling the sign bearing its name and carrying off pieces of its letters. Outside the gates, the army fired about 10 rounds into the air, scattering some protesters in the noisy but peaceful crowd. While police repeatedly shot at protesters in the weeks leading up to Ben Ali's ouster, he was the president, killing several, the army has been playing more of a peacekeeping role since it was brought in to try to restore order last week. Thursday's crowd of protesters swelled to about 2,000 people, many chanting, "The people want the government down." Others waved baguettes to symbolize the need to end food shortages. One father brought his children, ages 8 and 4, to the demonstration with a backpack of snacks and juice. "I want them to smell their free country and to see the new Tunis without fear," he said, while his children used colored pens to draw Tunisian flags on paper. Here is some background information for you on this crisis. Weeks of protests, driven by rising food prices in Tunisia, along with unemployment and complaints about corruption, drove the president to flee the country for Saudi Arabia on January the 14th after 23 years in power. The immediate trigger for the violent protests was the self-immolation on December 17th of Mohamed Bouazizi, a university graduate who had been unable to find work. After being harassed by police for selling vegetables from a cart, Bouazizi set himself ablaze. So, you see, the people have been provoked. The rule of the party in power for the last 23 years has not been a real blessing to the people. It's been rather dictatorial. And finally, with all of the economic crisis and the inability of people to find jobs, it simply blew up on the government, and things went a little faster than they thought. So finally, after 23 years, they're out of power. The interesting thing is that the other dictators all over the Middle East are very frightened because they see this as a potential for a sea change in the Middle East, that if these folks are able to get a free country on their own, that perhaps people in Saudi Arabia will try it, or perhaps people in some of these other dictatorships will try to do the same thing, all along the northern coast of Africa, for instance. And maybe in Libya they'll try it. Who knows? The sky might be the limit, and it may change things forever. Of course, if it does, the United States will be in trouble because all of our friends are dictators. We're more in the business of taking democracies and overthrowing them for dictatorships who will do our bidding. So we are a very unpopular item in this area, because they know what we're always up to, which is to achieve a hegemony over these nations. Now, recently, Somalia voted to withdraw from the Sudan, and that has frightened people also. The problem there was, all the murders going on in that state. So now they've withdrawn, and then we have Tunisia having a rebellion, and the other rulers are on guard. And they're asking the United States for help in case such things happen, which, of course, puts us again on the side of the dictators. But I'm sure that you can be absolutely certain our CIA is checking everything out along with the Mossad from Israel to try to keep our own hegemonial dictators in power so we can continue to milk these countries dry of their goods and then leave them bone poor when their oil runs out. Hanan Ashrawi, writing in the New York Times, says that Palestinians are well within their rights to bring the issue of Israeli settlements and their illegality before the United Nations Security Council. Our decision to do so follows both Israel's refusal to cease all settlement activity in the occupied Palestinian territory and America's failure to ensure Israel's compliance with international law and existing agreements. The United States should support such a move, not block it. It is universally recognized that Israeli settlements are illegal under international law, and that without full cessation of all settlement activity, Palestinian-Israeli negotiations and the two-state solution are both doomed. In spite of the dilution of American public statements, the United States still recognizes settlements as illegal. Not only are they a violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention, under the Rome Statute they are considered a war crime. With America unwilling to hold Israel accountable to international law and existing agreements, Israel has remained intransigent in the face of international efforts to revive genuine negotiations. A Security Council resolution would reaffirm today's international consensus in support of the two-state solution by recognizing the threat imposed by illegal settlements. This is not rocket science, Hanan writes. Settlements are built on occupied Palestinian land. They also entail the exploitation of Palestine's natural resources, including water. Both belong to a future Palestinian state. Without them, no Palestinian state can be viable. The true impact of Israeli settlements is measured not only by the way they undermine the two-state solution, it is also the enormous damage they inflict on countless Palestinian communities. These settlements superimpose a colonial grid over West Bank, including East Jerusalem. They constitute an illegal exercise of Israeli extraterritoriality in Palestine. Built on the expropriation of and theft of Palestinian land, they dominate the surrounding hilltops of the occupied West Bank, encircling, spying, and besieging Palestinian towns and villages below. These settlements of Israeli aliens stand at the heart of an ever-expanding web of checkpoints, walls, roadblocks, and settler-only bypass roads that marginalize Palestinian realities and render all normal life impossible. Palestinian farms, businesses, and homes have all been destroyed to make way for settlement expansion, while Palestinian lives and livelihoods have been shattered in the process. The rights and protections enshrined under international law apply as much to Palestinians as to anyone else. Indeed, at the very heart of the Palestinian struggle is a determination to win back these very rights and protections long denied us by Israel according to Mr. Hanan. Hanan says this applies much to the rights of Palestinian refugees living in exile for the last 60 years, as it does to the many Palestinians who have suffered for over four decades under the brutality of a vicious terrorist Israeli military occupation. Each American citizen is responsible for what's happening in Israel, because our government is using our taxes to pay Israel to exist. We have also allowed the Israeli banks in New York to overtake our governmental representatives and to control them using their immediate access to free money from the Federal Reserve, which the rest of us don't have. The Palestinians living here don't have access to free money, but the Jews who run the banks do. So nothing is fair in this country at all. No one else has access to this free money either, unless they own a bank. A bank can get this money out of the Federal Reserve, can then multiply it by a factor of 9 to 300 times, which is called counterfeiting, and loan that fake money out to other people at interest rates that are anywhere from 3 to 30%. So, of course, the Jewish banks are always going to be rich, and the people who run them are the Jewish mafia people and the Jewish Bolsheviks or communists who ran the Soviet Union using banking money from New York to get that communist nation started and to continue it, and then to use it to threaten the United States with war with Russia. And of course, their people also gave Russia nuclear secrets, such as Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, the Sobels, the Fuchs, etc., who stole our secrets, gave them to the Russians so that the Russians were able to shoot off atom and hydrogen bombs. And so the Cold War was on its way, which required the United States to take out loans from the banks, who simply made fake money and loaned it to the United States for interest, which is one of the greatest criminal acts that's been going on for the last 100 years of the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve needs to be ended. The Federal Reserve has ended. The power of Jewish criminals over the United States of America will be gone, and money from the United States to Israel will end. Otherwise, continue with it. Keep it going. Keep the nuclear freak show going in Washington and all over the Middle West, where there are missiles to deliver these systems, which will, of course, pull other missiles toward the Midwest and help to destroy the soil of our entire country in the event of a nuclear war, when other missiles come in to hit ours. Scoop out the land, turning it into strontium 90, which then will fall over all of our cities, killing millions of our people. Best thing we can do is to get rid of the Federal Reserve, close down these banks that are bankrupted and that simply live on money that they expand inside their own walls, which no one else can do. We can't counterfeit money or they'll arrest us, but the banks counterfeit it all the time to keep themselves looking like they're stable, when in fact they're not. They've already collapsed. And we need to recognize that fact, shut them down, take the money from the investors who put money into the stocks of the bank, reduce them to poverty the same way they've reduced millions of people to poverty with their foreclosures and with their non-desire to loan anybody money. They're never going to loan money, ever. Get used to it, America. You've got to shut these banks down or you're never going to get your country back, because the banks are what's running your government and causing them to start one war after the other so the banks can make the money off of the loans. Get it straight and get it right and take your freedom back. Get your representatives back. Make it impossible for corporations or for banks to loan money or to give money to your politicians to steal them away from you. They have no right to do that. No one in New York should be able to give money to my congressman in Missouri for his campaign. It's none of their business who we vote for here in Missouri. None of theirs whatsoever. And I wouldn't take money and do the same thing in New York to those New York people either. You know, we need to make this corruption illegal. This country is off the wall. It's just totally out to lunch, and that's why everything is a state of chaos in America in terms of the depression we have, the beholden nature of our politicians to the banks who support their re-election. We need to change this. This is just crazy. A lot of people think I have a bad attitude. Well, I live in a bad country, that's why I have a bad attitude. My country's at war every single day of the week. It's a country that claims it's for civil rights. Well, if it's for civil rights, how come it's always somewhere in the Middle East, beating up on some little brown people down there? Not that the Middle East people are really brown people, but Americans tend to be so racist that anyone that's slightly off-covered color is considered non-white. As a matter of fact, white people started in Iran. Iran comes from the word Aryan. Iran is where Eden was. And the people who came from Eden were Adamic. They were white. According to the Bible, Adam had such fair skin that he blushed in the face. And God named him Reddish from his blush. So yeah, I have a bad attitude. I've been persecuted by the United States myself over nothing. Well, it wasn't just nothing. There were two Jewish gentlemen in high position, such as Michael Mukasey, a lawyer and former judge who served as the 81st Attorney General of the United States. And then Michael Chertoff, who's the ex-head of Homeland Security, the man who helped murder all those people down in New Orleans who were abandoned down there in the water. Oh, yeah. Yeah, these two sent me a letter. Both of their names are at the top of it, inviting me to some kind of a pretrial, something or other, where I give up my rights and try to help the FBI out, because they were so busy. And lawyers told me, well, I didn't want to fight the United States government, because they always win. And you can see why they pay the judges with the same checks that the prosecuting attorneys are paid with the U.S. Treasury mark on the top. These judges know where their bread's buttered. They know who they have to please if they want the next appointment to a higher place, if they want a raise, etc., etc. So they terrorized my little rear end. And ever since they did that, as soon as I looked in the eyes of these agents of the federal government and all the crap they were giving me, I knew immediately I was living in a kind of Soviet Union. And the reason they came after me was because of my website, which was called Jewwatch News. And I covered the murders of Israel in it. Not only of Israel, but of the Jews from New York who went to the Soviet Union, founded it, paid for it, and then used it to kill 65 million Christians from 1917 to 1940, where the Red Army was run by Leon Trotsky up until about 1930-33, when he had to leave, because Stalin was kind of on to him. So at any rate, I exposed them for the murders that they've done, the millions and millions of murders, more than the United States has done. The United States has 320 million people in it, and there's about 8 or 10 or 12 million Jews, depends on how you want to count them. But they murdered, and just a small percentage of them went over to Russia, 350, and they murdered 65 million Christians there. And I blew the whistle. Well, these Jews, Mukasey and Chertoff, they didn't want me doing that, so they misused their positions in the high government to go after me. So I thought about it, and I thought, well, I got to figure out something legal to do to make America pay for what these people did to me. And so I came up with the idea of AmericanUSSR.com. my civil rights were violated, and I started investigating, and the civil rights of thousands of Americans have been violated. Our government's one of the most vicious governments in the world. It has injected 14-year-old girls with plutonium, even. It's injected retarded people with chemicals to see what would happen to them, and with biological agents that they knew might even kill them, and in many cases did. They didn't care. That's what America's all about. Don't you ever believe a word that an American official tells you, because if their mouth is moving, you know they're lying. Well, look at recently. I mean, do you forget that easily? Look at what happened with Iraq. They came up with this information they got from Chalabi. They found a guy who would lie to them just the way they wanted so they could help them, would help them start a war. He told them about yellow cake plutonium from Nigeria. And it didn't, it hadn't happened. There was no yellow cake. And then other mass destruction weapons that he talked about. And he was lying about that, too. Now, let me tell you something. The United States has a lot of agents around the world. They have the CIA is just about everywhere. And so is the FBI. So, if Mukasey's giving them a bunch of lies, they have enough agents to check this out. And they claim they didn't do it. And if you believe that, you're a liar. You're lying to yourself. You got to be lying to yourself if you think that they didn't check that out and found out it was untrue. They wanted that war. That's what 9/11 was all about, was they wanted a war in the Middle East, and nobody wanted it in America. And they also wanted to shut down all opposition, so what's the best way? Well, you hold a fake war game in New York where you pretend that you're watching planes that are going to fly into the World Trade Center. And, oh, guess what? A bunch of Arabs oblige you, according to your story, and fly these planes into the World Trade Center while you're holding everybody off so they won't stop them. And then we're supposed to believe that the federal government wasn't implicated in this. I tell you what. You know, if you don't have a sense of humor, it's going to kill you. It's going to kill you to know what's going on here in this country. I mean, you have to be a real sap to believe the United States government wasn't totally involved in the takedown of those buildings in 9/11. You say, oh, they wouldn't do a thing like that. They lost 3,000 citizens there. Oh, really? Well, they lost the same number in Pearl Harbor, and they knew the Japs were coming. Pardon me, I guess I shouldn't say Japs. I should say the Japanese. Japanese are actually quite nice people, although the ones that hit Pearl Harbor, I guess, weren't. But FDR knew they were coming. I have stuff on AmericanUSSR.com that blows the whistle on it. You know, all sorts of documents, etc. That's all up there. You can go up there and take a look at AmericanUSSR.com, look for Pearl Harbor, under Lies and Deceptions, and you'll see. This country lies all the time. It doesn't care how many people it kills, as long as it suits federal policy. And you could be the next victim. They could kill you, your wife, your children, your mother, your granddaughter. They'll kill anybody. These people are animals up there in Washington. They're absolute animals. And they supply the CIA with enough money to sink a thousand countries, man. You know? You don't ever trust anything the United States says or does, because they're liars. You know, they were trying to shut down Jewwatch News on the internet, the most visited website on Jewish history. And the president was saying at the same time that our country believes in honoring reporters, and we never try to shut somebody down because they're a government dissident, etc. And here they were hassling me. I mean, you talk about hypocrisy. It was right there. You know, this place is just another Soviet Union. That's why I called my website AmericanUSSR.com. And I've blown the whistle on America. Every dirty deed I have been able to find on America, I put up there. And you would not believe the number of medical experiments, for instance, that the United States has pulled on people. We're talking about a sick country here. We really are. Now let's take a look at this Mukasey, who was the Attorney General, and whose name was on the top of this document sent to me at my home to harass me and to terrorize me. Speaking in San Francisco to the California Commonwealth Club, Mukasey defended President George Bush's program of wiretapping calls between Americans and suspected terrorists without court authorization. Mukasey also implied the government might have been able to prevent the attacks of September 11, 2001, if it had been able to wiretap a specific call to the United States from Afghanistan. Well, that's very interesting, Mr. Mukasey. I mean, that doesn't follow the rules of evidence whatsoever. Makes you sound unqualified to be a attorney general or even an attorney. Mukasey said, before September 11, 2001, we knew that there had been a call from someplace that was known to be a safe house in Afghanistan, and we knew that it came to the United States. We didn't know precisely where it went. He paused as he was speaking in San Francisco to this group, seemed to try to stifle some crocodile tears, or at least suppress emotion. Then he continued, you've got 3,000 people who went to work that day and didn't come home to show for that. Well, you don't know that, Mr. Mukasey. You never listened to the phone call. You don't know what the phone call said. In a subsequent letter to Mukasey, House Judiciary Committee Chairman John Conyers questioned whether any such phone call had ever actually occurred. In other words, Conyers suggested he might not be telling the truth here, or might have been in error in so saying, and if so, Conyers said why the government hadn't been able to use its then existing legal authority and technological capabilities to monitor it, Conyers just didn't know, you know, why that wouldn't be so. On August 12, 2008, Mukasey told the American Bar Association annual meeting of delegates that not every wrong or even every violation of the law is a crime, such as what you did to me, Mr. Mukasey. Isn't that right, going after my newspaper? Violating my First Amendment rights to publish? With only violations of the civil service laws being found among hiring practices among Gonzalez's tenure as Attorney General, he felt that maybe the Attorney General shouldn't have been questioned about that. That showed a pretty clean guy. Well, I don't know. A law is a law, I guess. I can sort of agree with him on that a little bit, but the law is the law. And the Attorney General is supposed to follow all the laws. In November 2008, during a speech to the Federalist Society, Mukasey had a fainting spell. He was rushed to the hospital and released the next day. And doctors characterized him as extremely fit. A lot of people wondered, did he really collapse? I guess he must have. Another thing, Michael Mukasey, who was the Attorney General, came after me, had a close relationship with former Mayor Rudy Giuliani. And Mukasey and Giuliani have been friends since working in the same law firm since the early 1970s. Mukasey has pledged to recuse himself from cases involving Giuliani. Newspaper reports assume that Mukasey will further recuse himself from cases involving Bernard Kerik, a former New York City police commissioner under Giuliani, who is under federal investigation for bribery and other offenses. However, neither presidential spokespersons nor Mukasey returned reporters' inquiries into whether Mukasey would recuse himself. Now, this was when he was being nominated. But during Giuliani's 208 presidential campaign, Mukasey's son Market was assigned by Giuliani's campaign to block Kerik's legal defense team from interviewing witnesses that might assist his defense in an attempt to protect Giuliani from the Kerik case. Yeah. Typical. Speaking in London on March the 14th, 2008, Mukasey said that he hoped the detainees currently charged at Gitmo with participating in the September 11, 2001 attacks aren't executed if found guilty in order to avoid creating any martyrs. Anyway, there's your Mr. Mukasey. He's so concerned about America, but he can't even support my First Amendment rights. That's really something. He also delivered a speech in 2004 that defended the USA Patriot Act, expressed doubt that the FBI engaged in racial profiling of Arabs, and criticized the American Library Association for condemning the Patriot Act but not taking a position on librarians imprisoned in Cuba. This guy's a trip, all right. On August the 27th, 2007, the Wall Street Journal published Mukasey's op-ed, prompted by the resolution of the Padilla prosecution, in which he argued that current institutions and statutes are not well suited to even the limited task of supplementing a military effort to combat Islamic terrorism. Mukasey instead advocated for Congress, which has the constitutional authority to establish additional inferior courts, to turn its considerable talents to deliberating how to fix a strained and mismatched legal system, supposedly so that these accused terrorists could be rushed through the system a little bit more rapidly. I think what's really telling about Mukasey is that for 18 years before he became Attorney General. In his tenure on the bench, Mukasey presided over the criminal prosecution of Omar Abdel Rahman and El Said Nosser, whom he sentenced to life in prison for a plot to blow up the United Nations and other Manhattan landmarks uncovered during an investigation into the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. During that case, Mukasey spoke out against leaks by law enforcement officials regarding the facts of the case allegedly aimed at prejudicing potential jurors against the defendants. Mukasey also heard the trial of Jose Padilla, ruling that the U.S. citizen and alleged terrorist could be held as an enemy combatant but was entitled to see his lawyers. Mukasey was also the judge in the litigation between developer Larry Silverstein and several insurance companies arising from the destruction of the World Trade Center. Mukasey got into more public relations trouble by being the judge in the litigation between developer Larry Silverstein and the insurance companies on the destruction of the World Trade Center than anything else. His rulings allowed Silverstein to make billions of dollars in insurance payments from two buildings instead of making them only from one, as I recall. He was criticized pretty soundly for that, and he probably should have recused himself because Mukasey was Jewish and a Zionist. And guess what? So was Larry Silverstein. He was also Jewish and a Zionist. So, you know, being in a close-knit group like that where you're less than 2% of the people of the United States, and then presiding over a case like that as though you wouldn't want to find in favor of one of your tribal members, I think that's very, very questionable. I know what you're going to say. Well, the Christians judge Christians as well. But it's a little bit different when you're 80% of the American people versus when you're 2%. And you're judging one of the 2% because that's a very close-knit group. It's not nearly as broad-based as the group of Americans who are a Christian. And minorities tend to want to rule, I think, in favor of minorities. I don't think you can say that they wouldn't. Well, let me put it this way. You wouldn't pick a judge who originally was in the mafia to judge somebody who was in the mafia, would you? I mean, granted, he might know the mafia better than anybody else, but if you know them better than anybody else, you might not be the one that you'd want to have on a jury, because you're supposed to be blindfolded. And I don't know if Mukasey, being from the Jewish religion, where people are taught that, well, if you're Jewish, you have a, I guess, more of a right to be, to be helped by other Jews than if you're not, and then to have him judge one. I have a problem with that. But I have a problem with a Jewish person being appointed any high position in office, because this is a democracy. And in a democracy, the majority of the people have a right to be represented, not the minority. If the minority should be represented, then in every election that we have, the person who loses, who has a minority of votes versus the majority of votes, should be the person declared the winner. Let me repeat that. If we have a majority-run country, if we have a minority-run country, and there's an election, and one person gets 80 votes and the other one gets 30 votes, well, then you give the position to one with the 30 votes, because you're trying to run a minority country. We don't do that. We believe that the majority should win an election. So if there's 80 for and 30 against, the one with the 80 votes wins. You don't give the election to somebody who got a minority of votes. You give it to the one with the most votes. And these Jewish people don't have enough votes. They don't have the numbers to represent the majority. They have 2% representing 98%? No, that's wrong. If you can't see where that's wrong, then you're never going to correct what's wrong with the United States right now. Because these are the folks running this country. They're using their money and their almost monopoly ability to take money from the Federal Reserve, put it in their banks and counterfeit it, and buy everything they want with it. They're the only ones that can do that, just about. And as long as they can do that, they're always going to own everything. They're going to run everything. And you got yourself a problem, America. All these wars represent money for these bankers. The bankers are the very ones who started the Soviet Union and killed it, 65 million people. And now we're killing millions of people over in the Middle East because these same people own a vicious country headquartered in Tel Aviv, and they're destroying things for the people who used to live there alone. You've got a problem, America, and one of your problems is you just don't know what's going on. You might claim you do, but you don't. And you're being taken advantage of. And if you know, based on what they did to me, taking my civil rights away for a year, hey, listen, these guys will do anything. I believe it was the Israelis who were behind 9/11, along with the CIA. First of all, like I say, they were the government was holding a test to see if they could monitor what would happen if somebody flew civilian airplanes into the World Trade Center on the very day that it happened. Oh, now that's more than suspicious. Then you had the Mossad following these Arabs around the country and getting onto military bases and spying them out to see what the bases were doing, etc. And then on noon of the very day, 9/11, they arrested Jews on both sides of the George Washington Bridge, and each one of them had the same box cutter knives in their trucks, along with bomb-making materials. And they arrested them on the overpasses of both sides of the George Washington Bridge. And then they arrested the five Israeli dancers. they were dancing and filming it, and when they went back to Tel Aviv, they said on a TV show that they were sent there from Israel in order to record that event. In other words, they knew ahead of time what the event was going to occur. And as allies to America, well, I suppose they should have reported that to America, and they probably did. And then the Republicans and the neocons decided they want to have a war, so they said, well, let's just let them take them down. We need something like this so we can have this illegal war going. Because this is very typical of United States behavior. They don't care how many thousands of people they kill to start a war. They don't care. They don't care. There's that Leon Strauss, you know, of Hungary, a communist, came over here, and he taught a lot of these politicians that to be a good president, you have to have a war, and sometimes you have to do things illegal to get the war started. And if that's what you have to do, that's good, because you can't have a strong presidency unless you have a war to fight. And there you got it. You know what it's called? It's called the United States of America. And it's called a humanitarian government called the United States of America. And you know what? It isn't either. Not either one of them. I know, it's too much music together. Too much music together, but I wanted to have a punctuation there. I really did. I wanted to kind of punctuate what I was talking about. Because I wanted you to be able to think about it for a second before I went on. Hey, listen, this is my show. This is mine. I pay for this show. It's my show. And you just have to tolerate me. In fact, I'd hope that you'd love me, but even if you hate me, you know, I'd like you to at least understand that it's my show, and I'm going to do it the way I want to do it. You want to do it the way you want to do it? Get your own show. Like I said, it's my show and I can do it whenever I want. Whenever. I promise, I've stopped. I won't do that again. I'll stop. All right, the next story I want to read to you is about another American atrocity. American bombing has killed 12 more innocent people in Afghanistan. NATO commanders and Afghan President Hamid Karzai condemned the roadside bombing today in Afghanistan that led to the deaths of more than a dozen civilians, including women and children. The attack took place in Afghanistan's Patika province. Witnesses said the incident occurred when a civilian vehicle struck an insurgent-planted bomb in the province's Koshaman district. We join President Karzai in condemning the despicable murder of these innocent Afghanis, said Navy Rear Admiral Vic Beck. From the families who have lost loved ones to the communities they call home, every loss of innocent life, especially the loss of children, is incredibly painful. Our thoughts are with those grieving, and we will continue to work with the Afghan government in bringing those responsible to justice. All right, so I lied. I said that the Americans bombed them. Here we have the most remarkable thing. We have an American military person from the Navy condemning the bombing of these children. And, you know, the Navy itself has helped to bomb children in Afghanistan with its missiles from its ships. The Air Force has helped bomb them. The CIA has their own drones that bomb them. Why would they be so concerned about these 12 innocent people, including women and children? Oh, this is crazy. Navy Rear Admiral Vic Beck says, from the families who have lost loved ones, especially the loss of children, our thoughts are with those grieving. Well, sir, then why don't you get your country to stop bombing these children, these women, huh? Why are you coming up here like a rat and saying that your heart just bleeds for these people who were killed when your nation is the one killing most of them? And how do we know that you didn't kill them from the air and you're just pretending that it's a IED that was in the road? I mean, who would know the difference? Those things come down so rapidly, who would know the difference? Did you kill those people? Did America kill those people? And then we pretended that it was from an IED. Because America is such a liar. I mean, yeah, the fact that you're opening your mouth here and you're representing America makes me think that something's wrong here. Because America is a big liar. Lies all the time. Why would I think you're not lying? Why would I think any American military person is not lying? You guys lie all the time. I don't believe one word that you just said here. All I know is there's 12 people on the ground that are dead, and you're saying that it was because of the enemy planting a bomb. Was it the enemy that planted the bomb, or was it the CIA that got them to plant the bomb? Or was it the Mossad that got them to plant the bomb for the United States? You're not going to tell us the truth. Why should we believe that in this one instance you're telling the truth when America's lying to people all the time, like the weapons of mass destruction that's got us there in the first place? You expect me to believe everything you say after all the lies we've heard? The Gulf of Tonkins, the USS Maines? Huh? You expect me to believe anything you guys say? You have no credibility. You work for America, the great liar of the world. What kind of a schmuck do you take me for? What kind of a schmuck do you take my listeners for? That you would even think that they would believe anything that you said? Any of you people that work for the United States? Why would we ever believe anything you ever say? I don't think you've ever been capable of telling the truth, and why should you? You've been telling the lies for hundreds and hundreds of years, ever since you started. You've been telling lies to people. Why should you go before the press and tell the truth? Why should you go to a memorial for dead people and tell the truth? You don't have to tell the truth. You're government. Government's above everybody. It's okay for the CIA to lie to people and tell them, why don't you do the right thing for your country in Afghanistan and overthrow your president? And whatever else evil thing you want to do, you know, with your, like your MK Ultra experiments, you know, like giving people LSD and not telling them, and then they jump off of skyscrapers in New York, and you write that down as one of the outcomes of your experiment, and then you lie about it until somebody catches you at it, and then you say, oh, we're sorry. We're sorry. We allowed black people in Tuskegee to have syphilis for 50 years, and we could have treated them, and they obviously gave some of it to other people, too. We're sorry. We gave syphilis in 1950 to Guatemalan children, and we didn't tell anybody, and now we've been caught, and we're sorry. Well, I'm sorry, too. I don't believe anything that you say because you're associated with the United States. You might be telling the truth, but I have no way of knowing, and the fact that you're working for the United States of America makes me think that you and every other person is a liar that works for the United States, because the United States is a liar. I think America is totally incapable of ever, ever telling the truth. I mean, after the Cold War and all the deceptions pulled in the Cold War, all the deceptions pulled in the Civil War, in the Revolution, all of these things, all throughout our history, you expect me to believe anything that you lying people say? When you open your mouth, you're lying. I hope for you that you weren't lying. But I'm just assuming that everybody lies who's in uniform. Maybe I'm being too hard on these Americans. Maybe he's not lying. Maybe he's telling the truth. I mean, it's out of character for an American to tell the truth, probably. But maybe he is telling the truth. Let's give him the benefit of a doubt. Maybe he is. Maybe everything I've learned about America is totally wrong. Maybe my country tells the truth every time it opens its mouth. In fact, maybe in some other dimension out in outer space, maybe there are weapons of mass destruction floating around. Could be. Maybe there's some yellow mustard cake out there, too. Do you think? And maybe there are some real Muslim pilots who flew planes into the World Trade Center. And agents of the United States had nothing to do with it. That might be true, too. I mean, there may be a parallel dimension out there where things that aren't the truth here are true out there. And things that aren't true out there are true here. Yeah, that could be what's going on. You see, I think I have the right attitude. I've got the right stuff. I've lived all my life believing the United States was right. And then when they came after me, I knew it's like the Soviet Union, because it acted just like the Soviet Union. And then when the scales fell from my eyes and I started doing all this research about America, here, let me tell you some of the things America's done. Hold on here a second. Do you think the United States works in the best interests of its people? Well, let's take a look at some of these things America's done. In 1935, for instance, after millions of individuals died from pellagra over a span of 2 decades, finally the U.S. Public Health Service acts to stem the disease. The director of the agency admits it had known for at least 20 years that pellagra is caused by a niacin deficiency. So you ask, why didn't they ask? Well, the director said that they failed to act since most of the deaths occurred within poverty-stricken black populations. And of course it was the object of the United States to reduce the black population of this country. This was about the time of the syphilis experiment in Tuskegee. This was in 1935. The Tuskegee experiment started in 1932. The great country, the civil rights country. In 1940, just 5 years later, 400 prisoners in Chicago were infected by the federal government with malaria in order to study the effects of new and experimental drugs to combat the disease. Nazi doctors later on trial at Nuremberg cited this American study on malaria with 400 prisoners in Chicago to defend their own actions during the Holocaust. In 1942, Harvard biochemist Edward Cohen injected 64 Massachusetts prisoners with beef blood in a United States Navy-sponsored experiment. Thank you, America, you humanitarian little winch, you. Chemical Warfare Services began mustard gas experiments on approximately 4,000 servicemen in the same year, 1942. The experiments went on for 3 years until 1945 and made use of Seventh-day Adventists who chose to become human guinea pigs rather than serve on active duty. Why, we believe in civil rights. We respect everyone's civil rights. Why, we even tell Seventh-day Adventists who choose to become human guinea pigs rather than serve on active duties that they're good American citizens. Right. So then 1942 to 1944, in addition, the same U.S. Chemical Warfare Service increased their mustard gas experiments. And in 43, refrigeration experiments were conducted on 16 mentally disabled patients who were placed in refrigerated cabinets at 30 degrees Fahrenheit for 120 hours at the University of Cincinnati Hospital to study the effect of frigid temperature on mental disorders. Way to go, America. You're my kind of country. I love you. I love you. In 1942 to 1943, the U.S. began research on biological weapons at Fort Detrick, Maryland. Well, can you imagine what those experiments were like? I mean, if you were a soldier at Fort Detrick, how do you think you'd do with these biological weapons experiments going on? Hey, come here, Frank. We got a little experiment for you. You want to sign off on this? Sure, sir. Clunk, I'm dead. And in 1944, the Manhattan Project injected 4.7 micrograms of plutonium into soldiers at Oak Ridge. Come here, soldier. Yeah. 4.7 micrograms of plutonium injected into soldiers at Oak Ridge by the Manhattan Project. What a great country. You gotta love it. In the same year, the U.S. Navy used human subjects to test gas masks and clothing. Individuals were locked in a gas chamber and exposed to mustard gas and Lewisite. It's dark humor, but you gotta love it. I mean, this is the United States. They don't do stuff like this to people. In 1944 to 1946, University of Chicago Medical School professor Dr. Alf Alving conducted malaria experiments on more than 400 Illinois prisoners.